Bonjour, friends, and welcome to Whole Body Optimism for Healthcare Professionals, the podcast that's all about embracing a modern approach to positivity, clean living, and personal growth. I'm Dr. Chrissy, and I'll be your guide on this journey to a happier, healthier, and more optimistic you. Welcome to the show, Christine Meyer. I am so excited to hear more about you.
Thank you. My name is Christine Meyer. I am an ACE certified health coach. I'm also a yoga body certified breath coach and a certified health education specialist and a licensed physical therapy assistant. So I do have my feet wet in the medical field as well.
Wow.
So I've been a coach for about 15 years now.
Wow.
And started off working for a health insurance company. Still do that part-time. And now I'm doing my entrepreneurial world and looking for doing more coaching on my own.
Wow, that's great. So how did you, from being a coach 15 years ago, how did that kind of morph? Has it always been in about sleep? Has it always been coaching clients about that? Or has it kind of morphed into something that's been a specific interest of yours?
Right. So when I first started coaching, you know, sleep was not part of our curriculum. It was your weight loss, nutrition, exercise, tobacco cessation. We did have diabetes and heart health as well, but sleep wasn't in the picture. And then it was, as the more of the research came out about how important it was, we started coaching on sleep. And for a lot of people, it was such a new area. It was kind of scary. And I just fell in love with it. I was just fascinated by the science. And realized how sleep or lack thereof can affect people from reaching those other wellness goals that we were already coaching them on.
Wow.
You know, your appetite, your mood, your metabolism, heart health, all of that. And I just really loved coaching on that, especially because sleep is often related to stress too. And I loved coaching about stress management, who are so closely related. And I myself was an okay sleeper, never made it a problem. Like you said, it was just kind of like, I was a single mom, I worked, I was going to school and got sleep when it was convenient. Really didn't have that schedule. If I was tired the next day, it was that caffeine and all that unhealthy food that we crave, which wasn't good for my type 1 diabetes. And it was just kind of like, it just never really made it a priority until I started learning more about how important it really was. And then when I hit menopause, and started experiencing the night sweats just and not sleeping well at all. And just become a completely different person during the day. I just didn't even know myself, just moody and forgetful and cognition was poor and really affected my focus. And I was just really miserable. And that's when I really started to focus in on my niche of being midlife women, because in addition to the hormonal changes, there's so many other things going on during midlife that affect us mentally. That's what I really like to focus on. And I have a heart for healthcare workers as well, because I'm in that space.
Yeah.
I have lots of friends, family members who are nurses. And so I see how it affects their mental well-being when they're not getting enough sleep. And healthcare worker burnout, physician burnout is just at an all-time high, especially the pandemic. And I just don't think a lot of people are really aware of how their sleep habits are affecting their lives. So a lot of it is that awareness of just understanding how it's affecting them.
Sure. So I'm sure you get this a lot, but I'm curious your thoughts on the hospital never closes. So there's always got to be someone who's working at night, whether it be nurses doing the night shift, the 7P to 7A, or for me as a surgeon, I sometimes have to take 24-hour call where I am in the hospital for 24 hours. I don't like to take 24-hour call because I think it does mess up with my sleep. And there was a study that was just recently published by a good friend of mine that showed they studied trauma surgeons and they wore this Whoop band and they looked at their sleep patterns and how their heart rate variability recovered. And it takes, and Jamie Coleman was the fire starter for this study. And I really appreciate that she did it. And she really showed that it takes about 2 days to recover from an overnight call. So what are your thoughts on that? And I'm curious to see what your opinion is of like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah, that's the tough part, because we're talking a higher level there of changing policies, right? So, and not just the 24-hour shifts, but shift workers that are working 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's a whole different, I hate to say monster, but it kind of is. It's a whole different area of specialty. And so supporting them the best we can on how they can optimize sleep as far as when they're going to sleep and what they can do during their shift in regards to, you know, eating habits and things like that as well. It's a holistic type of viewpoint here. And I think it's kind of like one of those areas where they're sometimes kind of forgotten about.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about go to bed at 10, get up at 6, but what about these people that are working these late shifts? I think that's a real great area of opportunity, because they do have higher health risks as well because of the shift they're working.
Right. So when you work with the healthcare workers that do have these off hours and the nighttime shifts, do you happen to see if they are at increased risk for chronic stress effects, cortisol, interrupted sleep patterns? Is that all kind of coincide with one another?
They do. You know, that's not something that I check for. I'm not a clinician, so I don't order lab work, but based on the research, we know those things can happen for sure. And a lot of them, they're working the night shifts because they have kids. So they're working at night and they're coming home. They're taking the kids to school, or they're napping kind of sporadically throughout the day, just whenever they can kind of fit it in. And it just affects everything, metabolism, mental health. They're just feeling miserable throughout the day. So you kind of have to work with people one-on-one to find out their particular situation and what's doable for them to kind of make at least a few little changes to optimize their sleep and their overall well-being. So it's definitely a complex issue.
Yeah, totally. I tend to like tell my clients about some clean hygiene that they should practice before they go to bed. What are some of the top things that, since you're an expert on this, what do you think are some top, let's say, five clean hygiene for people whenever they're getting ready to go to bed that they should really prepare for before they get ready for bed?
Right, right. Well, probably one of the big number ones is what we're on right now is this wonderful screen. So our phones, our computers, whatever it might be, our tablets is ideally, in an ideal situation, trying to be off of those about an hour before we go to sleep, because that blue light does affect our melatonin production, which is telling us it's time to wind down to go to sleep. And that's delayed when we're on those screens up until bedtime. Wow. And also depending on what we're watching, that can provoke some anxiety and actually affect sleep too, especially if we're watching disturbing types of things or anything that provokes stress. Mm-hmm. So that would be a big one. You know, having a sleep schedule as much as possible, trying to go to bed around the same time and wake up the same time, even on the weekends. A little bit of variance is okay, but doing the best we can to have that schedule to keep that circadian rhythm in sync there.
Sure.
Having a nighttime routine is really key as well. Having relaxing activities that we do 30 to 60 minutes before we go to bed. Mm. I like to people kind of think of that as your spa time. You know, what would you do to just relax and zen out, whether that be a warm shower, listening to relaxing music, stretching, things that aren't mind stimulating, but mind calming.
Sure.
And waking up at that same time, having that morning routine kind of sets the tone for the day as well. You know, as you know, about cortisol, it's not always bad. We actually do need it in the morning to give us that awakening feeling. And again, set that circadian rhythm. So getting up and having that intentional morning time is really key.
Right.
And everything we're doing throughout the day is going to follow us to bed. So really take time throughout the day to have those moments of pause where we're sitting still, resting, relaxing in some kind of way, instead of just go, go, go all the way until bedtime. And then we wonder why we can't fall asleep because everything has been rushed throughout the day. So taking those just little bits of time wherever you can throughout the day to just kind of slow down and reflect and just be still.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I love those good solid viewpoints on those tips. I study a lot about melatonin, and a lot of people will ask like, oh, do I just take melatonin supplements to get better sleep? I kind of discourage taking chronic melatonin supplements. What do you think are some natural ways that people can boost their melatonin so that their naturally circulating melatonin will be higher when they get to bed at the end of the day?
Right. So we talked about the screens already. That's a big one. Oh, yeah. Just light in general. So, you know, as the sun's going down, maybe turning off those overhead lights and using table lamps. We don't do floor lamps around here, really, but table lamps, even using different kind of light bulbs. I have some that have like an amber orange setting on them. Oh, so it's not that LED light.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. And so just creating that really relaxing environment, getting that morning sun helps with that serotonin release, which we need. That's a precursor to melatonin. Mm-hmm. And then even things like stress and anxiety can affect our melatonin levels. So, but I would say for most people, the light is probably like the biggest factor because we're exposed to it all the time, right? We can go to the grocery store at 9 o'clock at night and go grocery shopping because lights everywhere. And I don't think we really realize how much that can really affect those melatonin levels.
Wow. No, that's a really good point.
Yeah. And they've talked about different foods. I'm sure you're familiar with that. I don't know. Still, the research is kind of vague as how much of this food would you need to actually produce enough melatonin? So those could be helpful. Like we've talked, you know, the red tart cherry juice and things like that. But we don't really know. Those aren't necessarily going to make you, I don't think, fall asleep. So there's a lot of more research that needs to be done on those.
Right. What's your opinions about like a sleepy tea? I tend to use a tea sometimes whenever I can't sleep. I don't know if it's just a placebo effect, but sometimes I just make a lavender tea or something, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There are a lot of teas that the research shows they have a calming effect. Like you said, lavender, chamomile, valerian root. Yeah. The sleepy time teas are great. I use those as well. I love my moon milk, which is kind of the almond milk with the turmeric and the honey and all of that. It has a good calming effect too. So yeah, those are great ways to wind down at night as well.
That's nice. Now, how do you feel about temperature? You know, I've talked to several people and read some of the literature behind it. Some people claim that they don't like to sleep in a cold room. They like to have a heating pad on their bed to go to sleep. And sometimes actually when I'm on call, interestingly, whenever I'm in the hospital, I feel like I need it warm in order to take a nap. Whereas whenever I'm in my bed here at home, I feel like it needs to be cold.
Right. Yeah. In the hospital, it's hard to say because they've got the way that the air blasts through the vents and things like that, that could definitely affect it. And yeah, the studies show that between 60 to 67 degrees is ideal. Even if you feel cold, you could still use more blankets, but apparently just having the environment around you cooler is still going to be better. And I definitely noticed that after I hit menopause. I used to be the type that would just have to be wrapped up in a blanket, even in the summertime. And I started experimenting with that and just getting the temperature down a little bit lower and lower till I did hit that like 67 degrees. That's kind of like my sweet spot. But I used to want it to be like 75 in the house all night. I just can't do that now. Wow. So, you know, of course, everybody's going to be different and you may not notice a difference until you actually kind of play around with it and see. But from, like you said, what the research shows is that cooler environment is better for the sleep.
Yeah, that's so true. I have a lot of listeners that have kids. We don't have kids, but you know, do you just snuggle up the kids in more blankets if you have to put your temperature cooler in the house?
Probably, right. You know, I talk to a lot of women who they're same thing with couples. They want the fan, their husband wants to be cuddled up or vice versa. So ideally the person that needs it coolest would win. And then everyone else just kind of needs to bundle up or layer. Yeah.
Wow. That's
unless you can get another room, you can do separate temperatures and that,
oh, sure.
That part. But yeah, the cooler temperature is usually the best.
Wow. That's interesting. So what have you seen has been the hardest thing for your clients whenever they're transitioning to poor sleep to good sleep? What do you see any like stumbling blocks or hard things that they have to go through in order to sort of clean up their sleep routine?
Right. For a lot of them, it's just that constant busyness. They feel like they have to stay up to clean or finish up whatever they didn't get done during the day type of a thing. So they just feel like they don't have the time to sleep. And then when they do try to go to sleep, they can't because their mind is racing. They're still very busy. So again, a lot of that is teaching them about the importance of that transition time, winding down, prioritizing time, what has to be done and what can be done later. And the screens is a big one too, just the mindless scrolling. That's how some people like to relax at the end of the day, but they're not realizing how it's actually keeping their brain more active and preventing them from being able to get good sleep. So it's just that constant doing that we're always is going on. That seems to be one of the big problems. A lot of people, it is their job. That's their main stressor. And so they're working long hours. They feel obligated to their job. They're not taking breaks. And that's what they're thinking about when they go to bed. That's what they're thinking about when they wake up in the middle of the night. So really practicing that self-care and making them a priority so that they can calm themselves and be able to sleep at night. Stress is such a huge one.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure if you have any recommendations of a mantra or anything like that, but I know that for me, what I tend to do is I just like sometimes just repeat one, two. Like I breathe in with one, I breathe out with two. And literally that helps me focus on those two numbers so that I'm not thinking about the things that my brain wants to think about. Because if I would just let my brain go sometimes, yes, I agree. There is always something trying to race around, trying to have a problem for me to solve, trying to the next best thing for me to do. Oh, should I post this? Should I do this? Yeah. Should I pick up this shift? Like all these things. So I totally get that. Do you have any advice on the mantras or anything you give your clients?
Yeah, I mean, whatever works. I'm a yoga breathing coach, so I love to teach relaxation breathing exercises because it calms the nervous system, right? And so that's a huge one. Journaling is really good for a lot of people. Journaling before bed or even keeping a notebook next to their bed. If they're waking up, doing that ruminating and that thinking, write it down. Once you can get it down onto paper, it helps to get it out of your head. There's actually studies that show that. So learning ways to clear the mind and finding ways to relax the nervous system, whether it be the mantra or yoga or prayer, journaling, whatever it might be, people just have to experiment and find out what works best for them.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. On a side note, since you are involved with yoga, I'm curious, what is your favorite type of yoga to practice?
I love hatha yoga, you know, the basic poses before. Sometimes if I do it before bed, I do like to do more of the restorative type of yoga, the relaxation with the breathing, because I myself have anxiety. So I just tend to be tense all of the time. And so it's a good way to just become more mindful and aware of how my body is responding to stress.
I like that. Yeah. So do you happen to have any recommendations on yoga apps or, you know, do you follow anybody on YouTube or anything that has worked really well that you recommend?
I really like Paula Lay and of course Yoga with Adrienne, which a lot of people know on YouTube, but those are two of my favorites. Sometimes I'll just lay down on the floor by myself and just without any kind of videos and just kind of do my own stretching and breathing routines.
Wow, that's really nice. Yeah, I'll have to try that one out. You said Yoga with Adrienne?
Adrienne, yeah. A-D-R-I-E-N-E. I don't know if it's two N's. And then Paula Lay, which is, she's yogi in Melbourne. She's down in Australia.
Oh, but, cool.
Yeah.
Nice I'll find those and put those in the podcast notes for sure. Now, I'm not sure if you have children. We don't have children, but a lot of times on my podcast, I have my guests talk about what can we do for the kiddos? How can we encourage them to have a cleaner routine in their life? And in your sense, how can we encourage them to have better sleep? Do you have clients that are young that you have to teach them how to sleep? Do you have any experience with kids with sleeping issues? And if you can give them advice here.
I myself do not have experience with children sleeping issues. That's that. There's actually coaches that do specialize in childhood sleep. Again, that's a whole different area.
Sure.
But that routine is really, really key. Because if you think about it, what we as an adult should think about as well, where most parents are pretty diligent about feeding the kids dinner at a certain time, giving them that bath, reading, lights off around the same time. That's what we should be doing as adults as well, is having that same kind of wind down routine. We do well with routine, especially kids. They're still developing, and so they need that routine for their temperament. We do as adults as well. We just don't always realize it. But the type of thing of having that routine and that schedule, as far as actual sleep issues, again, that would be left with a coach that specializes in pediatric sleep. And there actually are quite a few of those out there. It's very interesting.
Right. Wow. Well, that's very interesting. I have a question for you about sleeping with partners that snore. I asked you this from my personal experience of my husband. I wonder, do you recommend anything for the sleeper and not the snorer in that regard? Or is it just he should be getting something done with the snoring?
Well, I've been on both ends. I've been a snorer and the sleeper. So yeah, that can be a touchy subject, because for some, they've talked to their spouse about getting some help with the snoring or possible sleep apnea, and it's not happening. And so what do you do? So as the sleeper, you can try earplugs or some kind of white noise that might drown out the sound. Some couples do sleep separately. And my husband and I slept separately for a very long time when I started to develop snoring and sleep apnea. He doesn't have sleep apnea, but he does snore. And my sleep's important to me. And so we just kind of ended up sleeping separately for a while, which is kind of frowned upon in our society. But there's actually a lot of people that do it because they need that sleep. It's actually helped their relationship. But yeah, especially if someone's snoring, that could be a sign of sleep apnea, which is, as you know, harmful down the line if not treated. So encouraging the best they can. But again, as a sleeper, you can do the best you can to drown out sound. If you're okay with sleeping separately and it's a conversation that you have with your spouse and you come to a mutual agreement about it and how you're going to still maintain your intimacy and all of that, it can actually help your relationship, because you're getting that decent sleep that you need.
Yeah, I definitely agree with those tips for sure. I've used I don't know if you've ever seen the Bose they're like earplug things where I don't want to say they're headphones, because you can't like stream anything else from your phone with them, which is a little frustrating. But at the same time, they only play like white noise, nature noises, and things like that. So actually it has helped me. It definitely drowns out his snoring. But also sometimes whenever I'm on home call, my phone goes off. And so I can't drown out the noise too much because I need to listen to my phone. And then also that can wake him up too. So it's definitely, I know people out there that are listening, you know, sleep is sometimes not a one-sided thing. You can only do so much your own self to help yourself get to sleep. And sometimes you have to play around your children or your spouse who's also sharing space with you and sleep space.
Right. It can be a touchy subject for sure. And I myself, on the nights where there is a lot of snoring, which there's not now, you got a CPAP, so we're good. But I would just wear the basic, the foam earplugs. I sleep outside, so I put one earplug in the ear that was up, and then I would leave the other one out, the one that was on the pillow. So I'm the same way. I need my phone just in case there's a family emergency or something like that. I don't sleep with my phone, but I keep it on in another room and certain people can get through to me. So I want to make sure that I do hear it. So it blocks out enough of the sound where I can sleep, but I could still hear if my alarm went off or the phone rang. So
sure. There are different ways. Now I've seen, I'm sure you've seen in the media recently, and people have been talking about this for years, but people are saying sleeping with your phone disrupts your sleep and gives you long-term health consequences. What is your stance on that?
I'm a big proponent of not keeping the phone in the bedroom if you don't have to, just for so many different reasons. When we can't sleep, that's often the first thing we're doing is is picking up your phone. Yeah. You know, put it on the dresser, across the room, out of the room if you can. Invest in a good old-fashioned alarm clock. If you are concerned about people being able to reach you for an emergency, you can set the settings on your phone where you only get alerts through the phone or the text from certain people. That way, if there is an emergency, you can still get it. But it's just such a temptation to have right next to you, because it's so easy to pick it up in the middle of the night. That's what we do when we can't sleep, is we look at our phone, but then that's going to affect our ability to get back to sleep again. So it's kind of that vicious cycle.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, this was so helpful, and I learned so much from you, and I'm sure our listeners learned so much more about how they can improve their sleep quality and prioritize sleep, because sleep is so very important for recovering from our stressful days, and it actually puts us in a better state whenever we wake up in the morning so that we can be refreshed for a new day, a new intention. So I appreciate everything that you have taught us today, and if you have any way that you want to get in touch with Christine and have her services, I will put her information in the podcast notes so that you can get in touch with her and get some sleep coaching. So thank you so much for joining us, and I'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on this uplifting journey through whole body optimism for healthcare professionals. We really hope you found this episode today as enlightening and inspiring as we did. Remember, optimism isn't just a state of mind, it's a way of life. And you have the power to shape your own destiny. Be sure to follow us on this podcast and on Instagram and Facebook to learn more about practical and simple tips to find your true whole body optimism.